Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Give countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. The midweek, kind of like between Christmas and New Year's edition. Here we are on, oh my God, it's December the 30th. Wow. Amazing, another year, how quickly it has passed, how very quickly it has passed. And when you get to be a little older, isn't it something when you were a kid? Do you remember those long, endless summers when you were a kid? You got out of school around Memorial Day. We did when I was a kid, country kid. You know, they really did the summer thing so that the farm kids could work on the farm. That's how that really originated. And that was about hay baling time. So you got out around Memorial Day and didn't go back until the first school day after Labor Day. And it was like, oh, it lasts forever. The summers were so long and wonderful. And now, bam, and they're gone. It's incredible. Of course, it's summer all year round here in Southwest Florida, as you well know. Although it's somewhat cool here today. It's only about 78. Yeah, a little bit cool. But the snowbirds coming down from the north, they're still enjoying the weather. We have had wonderful weather for all those folks visiting. And there's nothing more sad, and you can see it on the faces, when planeload after planeload comes into the Fort Myers International Airport, Regional Southwest, I think it's called. And when you see those folks after they leave the airport, and it happens to be a day when it's rainy or cool, you can see the disappointment because you know they ran off from cold, icy, snowy weather to get down here in a hurry. When I lived up north, I did that myself. Yes, they would just say, hey, this is too cold. Let's get the hell out of here. And so we did come to Florida, and I remember a couple of times it was somewhat cool, but you went to the beach anyway. That's how you can tell the northerners from people who've lived in Florida for a long time. The people are out on the beach today. Well, they're definitely all northerners. Of course, everybody that lives here is working if you have a job. But people that live here, they don't go to the beach on a day when it's 76, 78 degrees. They just don't do it. They wait for the warm weather. Anyway, here I am babbling on about weather once again. I do welcome you to the Guy James Show. We hope to have a good show for you today. I am really anticipating having a guest on live from Gaza. I have to call him in about 11 minutes to confirm. And if things are right there, if conditions are decent, if they have power, if they're not under attack by the Israelis at that moment when I call, why, he's going to be a guest. And guess what the man's name is? Muhammad Ali. That's right, Muhammad Ali. And he's representing an organization called Oxfam. It's from the Oxford University who started a famine relief program many, many years ago, I think back in the 40s, and he's in Gaza on a relief mission. And I see Cynthia McKinney tried to get a boat with relief supplies to go to Gaza, and her boat was rammed by the Israeli Navy and kept them from going out of the port. They had to go back into port in, I think, Lebanon. And I think that's where they came out of port. So the Israelis doing everything they can to starve the people out, and we'll talk about that in a little while. Meanwhile, at the moment, we have a comedy of epic proportions taking place on TV. We have Blagojevich appointing a man by the name of Roland Burris, a former Illinois attorney general, to fulfill the remaining a couple of years of Obama's term. And, of course, the Democrats are saying, Harry Reid's office, they're saying that they will not seat this guy in the Senate. I think they might want to do a little research on it because they could be wrong on this. Now, who am I to say? I don't have access to the, well, I do, the bylaws of the United States Senate and the House, but they could be wrong about this about saying that the Senate has full power not to seat the governor's pick. If you remember, the Adam Clayton Powell versus McCormick case back in 1969, that was with Adam Clayton Powell, and the Supreme Court said 7-2 that a House of Congress does not have such power that they can judge, you know, they can judge qualifications in the constitutional sense, age and citizenship and so forth, and they can judge elections, but say nothing about appointments. They can probably throw somebody out if they see fit. Though the court's decision wasn't really definitive on that, but on what grounds would they throw this guy out? So we'll see if that really happens. We will see. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us here in the program today. We intend to talk quite a little bit about the Israeli-Gaza-Palestinian conflict. Pretty much one-sided, as usual, in that part of the world. And like I mentioned, we will hopefully have a live guest on coming up in about 23 minutes or so, if we can arrange it. We still, it's going to be a bit awkward. We have to call in a few minutes and get that confirmed, but we're going to do what we can to do that. How many of you saw Joe Scarborough's program this morning? I normally don't see it. I'm very tired of Joe Scarborough. Very tired of Joe Scarborough. He's another one that has changed his tune. He was hardcore right. Now he's trying to play the middle for the money, you know, for the money. Wouldn't you like to know? I sit here and I pontificate and I go on and on about my morals and ethics and about this business. Not about my personal life, but about this business. What I would do, would I sell my soul for millions of dollars like people like Limbaugh and Hannity and many of these guys do? Would I do that? And I say no, I would not. But until a big pile of cash is sitting on the table in front of you, you probably can't answer that. You might think you can, and I think I can. If someone came to me all of a sudden and say, hey, you know, we like your style. We like what you do on the radio. This is okay about you, and that's okay about you. But we do not like the fact that you're coming at everything from the view of the left or the center left. We don't like that. We want you to change into a right winger. And if you do that, we'll pay you $1 million a year, $2 million a year, whatever these guys make. Well, I sit here today and I say I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't sell my soul for that. Or maybe I could give a wink and a nod to my audience and go, uh-huh, okay, yeah, sure, I'll do that, and know that then my audience would know that everything I was saying was I was being facetious or, nah, I wouldn't get away with that. Couldn't do it. Couldn't sleep at night. Could not do it. But some of them evidently have convinced themselves that they can. And they do it. But anyway, I digress. Joe Scarborough this morning got his ass handed to him by Zbigniew Brzezinski. Woo! I would have been mortified had I been Scarborough, but Scarborough, he took it well. I must say that. He smiled, but you could tell he was eaten up inside that Zbigniew Brzezinski said that Scarborough had a stunning, and I'm pretty sure those are the words, stunning ignorance of the events when Bill Clinton was ending his term about what was going on between the Palestinians and the Israelis and the Egyptians and all that. He was giving the old line that Clinton never got anything done and that the Palestinians walked away with everything they wanted from that deal and that. And Brzezinski just looked at old Joe and said, you have such a stunning ignorance of what went on there. It's almost embarrassing to listen to you. And Scarborough, oh man. This is on MSNBC. I believe the video is on there, MSNBC.com. And it's on there. But God, if somebody ever said anything like that to me, and Joe tried to defend himself, but at that point he knew who he was talking to. He realized that he was talking to Brzezinski and he was going to get nowhere. This was like a second grader trying to debate a senior in high school, if you know what I mean. And guess who was the second grader? I mean, I wouldn't. I think I've got a good knowledge of that area and what went on in the history of it. I think I do. But to try and argue or debate with Brzezinski? Please. Only a fool would do that. And Joe accepted the fool's role this morning, so I'm sure he's having a tall one someplace tonight going, oh my God. And you could tell that Mika, Brzezinski's daughter, who's Joe's sidekick, she was a bit antsy when her daddy was just giving it to Joe. And he did it with a smile on his face. I have to admit that. Brzezinski was not rude or insolent whatsoever about it. He did it with a smile. He did it with conviction. He did it forcefully and yet very gentlemanly. And so it was great. It was great. I see on the chat room, the Head On Radio Network chat room, it's being talked about this morning. And this afternoon, rather. Corey Stone, he knows what I mean. He brought it up as well. It was great. It really was. I enjoyed it so much. You see these guys who think they're experts. You know, there comes a time when you just back off and to someone of a higher intellect and say, well, yes, it would be like me. Melvin Laird. Do you remember Melvin Laird, Secretary of Defense during the Nixon administration? He lives not 100 yards from where I'm sitting right now. I didn't like him. I didn't like the policies of the Nixon administration. I think they were awful. But would I sit down and debate that guy about what actually went on behind closed doors during? No, I would be a fool to do that. And just as Joe Scarborough was an absolute fool today to try and debate Zbigniew Brzezinski. Mika probably went home feeling good. She wanted to get to a break during this thing. She kept going, sticking her hand up. Okay, we're going to go to a break. And they did. And I didn't get to see it after the break, but Corey Stone said that she was into it. So that's a good thing. I wonder what Joe had to say to her afterwards. I wonder if she just looked at him and grinned. Because she could have had a really good grin over that. See, I tell you what, we're going to take a quick break. And not going to be real quick, but I've got to get on the phone to Gaza and try and raise our friend from Oxfam and see if we're going to have this live interview coming up in a few minutes. So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We'll put on a tune, really a great tune. I got some great tunes today, and so we'll be back in just a bit.
real. She made secret talk to the monkey man from a mansion on the hill. It was out on Thunder Road, sweet on at the wheel. They crashed into paradise, they could hear them tires squeal. The undercover cop pulled up and said, everyone is a liar. If you don't surrender now, it's gonna go down to the wire. Behind, Twitter took his gun away and messed up his mind. The undercover cop was left tied up to a tree. There's a souvenir stand by the old abandoned factory. Next day, the undercover cop was a hot in pursuit. He was taking the whole thing personal. He didn't care about the loot. Janet told him many times it was you to me who taught. There's Jersey, anything's legal.
We're back here on the Guy James Show after listening to the Traveling Wilburys. Oh, yeah. That was a great group. I got a couple other their tunes coming up today. Always liked their stuff. It wasn't that popular, I guess, but I liked it. You know why? Because I think Corey Stone's got the same appreciation for it I do. I haven't asked him, but I know he's a musician as well. And I sing and play and so forth. And the idea of getting together with Petty and Orbison and Harrison and Dylan and Lynn and just hacking around and having a good time and then at the end of the gig, getting together and say, okay, now let's polish this up and make a tune out of it. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I got a song coming up today that the rest of them, to my knowledge anyway, wrote it for Roy Orbison because they all thought Roy Orbison had the greatest voice in the history of pop music. But to get together and just jam and have a good time, everybody kind of understanding what the other guy's doing musically, and I've done that a bit, and it is so much fun, so much fun. And sometimes some great stuff comes out of it, some great harmony. And also, here I am running off the head about music today. This isn't a show about music, but do know that I do love that. Hey, I did get a hold of our guest, and he is going to be our guest. It is somewhat chaotic right now in Gaza, but in about 7.5 minutes or so, I think we might just dial him up live so that we don't have any problems back and forth because they're in a very tenuous situation right there. I don't know if they know if rockets are coming at them or what, if they have to take cover, but we are going to have a guest live from the Gaza Strip, which has been under attack by the Israelis. I think many of you know how I feel about that situation, and if you don't, I certainly will make it known later on in the program because I do plan on talking about it quite a bit. The Blagojevich circus is on. He has named Roland Burris to fill Obama's Senate seat. It is official. He has done it. The guy's got more balls than, I don't know. I don't think it'll stand in the United States Senate. It might. We will see. But this Blagojevich, take a look at his eyes when he's talking. Take a look at his eyes. He looks disturbed to me. I don't know. I don't know. We'll see. But an odd choice. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen there? But I am surprised he went ahead with it in a way. I really am. Yeah, I see. Actually, we've got a TV in the studio today, and Burris is accepting congratulations from everyone, being the new appointee by the governor. But whether or not he ever sits in the chair, I don't know. He's been contacted today and says that he is not interested in running again, that he is only interested in fulfilling the 2 years left on Barack Obama's term. He would be the, to my knowledge, I think the fourth African-American to be a United States Senator, and if memory serves me correct, I think it would be three of them from Illinois, I believe. I could be wrong, but I don't know. So there we are, Blagojevich kind of just daring everybody, I think, knowing that he's going to be impeached, absolutely knowing he's going to be impeached, so he's going to stick mud in everybody's eye. I don't know how this goes down with the Illinois legislature. Don't know whether this will annoy them. I don't know how they feel about this gentleman. I don't know how I feel about this gentleman. Frankly, I know very little about Roland Burris. I do know he ran for mayor of Chicago once. I do believe he ran for governor of Illinois once or twice. Was underfunded and didn't really make a big dent in it, but he was the Attorney General of the state of Illinois. And what puzzles me is that I do know that Mr. Roland Burris, at least some quotes that I have seen, was very hard on Blagojevich on what has taken place on all of this thing. So I am a bit puzzled by this whole thing. There's some kind of undercurrent going on here that I'm not completely aware of. So we'll keep an eye on that for you today. Stock market rise now is up about 100 points. Interesting that nothing big has happened because of this military exercise taking place by the Israelis. Imagine, if you will, Gaza has a population of, Like 1.4 million. And Israel has a population of 7.4 million. In the United States, we've got about 305 million. And so far, a little bit over two hundredths of a percent of the people in Gaza have been killed by the Israelis in these current bombings. Okay, you figure that all out mathematically, as opposed to the population of Israel and the population of the United States, and that equates to 61,000 Americans being killed. If we're going to use the same percentages, 61,000, like 30 9/11s. Can you and people wonder why? The Palestinian people, the people who live in Gaza, you wonder why they feel the way they do. Can you imagine what would be going on in this country if say, Canada had sent rockets over the border and killed 61,000 Americans? Can you possibly imagine? You know how we went crazy when it was 3,000 at 9/11, and rightly so. Can you imagine 20 times that many people as the same proportion of the population that has been killed in Gaza right now? So while the rest of the world looks at this, many of the rest of the world looks at this situation and goes, ho-hum, this is a huge deal. It's a huge deal to the people involved. And I do plan on talking about it at length today. I hope I don't bore you with it. I should not bore you with it. You should not be bored with it because it is important. It's very important what's going on in the heart of the Mideast over there right now. And it's also important concerning the Obama administration coming up. Are they going to kowtow to the Israelis once again and let them do what they want to do at will? I mean, there's such a thing as proper punishment for people lobbing rockets at you. There's such a thing as proportional response. And the response from the Israeli is always very non-proportional. It's always way overdone. And I know that's their modus operandi. But to make everybody, hey, if you kill one of us, we'll kill 50 of you. And that's the way it works out. And I know you have a right to defend yourself. And I'm not saying that the Israelis don't. But their responses in killing innocent civilians and not taking the proper care to avoid that and the blockades that they kept people from getting humanitarian aid, proper food, proper water, proper sewage system. I believe the average person in the Gaza Strip lives on $2.30 a day. Can you imagine that? Can you possibly imagine that? Living in these filthy, disease-ridden camps. How can anybody sanction that? And yet we do in this country. Let's get on the phone. See if we can get our guest. Get the old number out here and see where we... I'm not good at talking and ringing in at the same time. Let's see what happens here. See if we've got the right number.
Hello.
Good afternoon, Muhammad.
Yes?
This is Guy James from The Guy James Show.
Hello.
We are live on the program right now, and I welcome you to The Guy James Show, and thank you so much for responding to our request to have you on today to give us some insight as to what is going on in the Gaza Strip right now and with the people and the humanitarian problems. And first of all, could you tell us a little bit about your organization and why you are there?
Well, my organization is Oxfam GB. It's a British organization. It's an international humanitarian aid organization. It serves the poor people in the Gaza Strip, and it has its office in Gaza, but the main office in Jerusalem. serving the Palestinian poor people and providing them with food, you know, and working with different partners like Ma'an Developmental for food and the water utility, and working in the public health sector as well. Oxfam is serving about 25,000 people in the Gaza Strip, you know, trying to help them with these three sectors, food, water, and public health aid. Actually, since the start of the Israeli offensive operation in the Gaza Strip in 3 days ago, Oxfam has suspended their operation in the Gaza Strip because due to the intensive Israeli strikes targeting different targets, and it's a very risk for the humanitarian aid workers to move, which restrict our movement as a humanitarian aid workers. For me, I'm working as in media and advocacy with Oxfam in Gaza, and since the 3 days we hibernate and suspend our work, and we are staying homes. At this moment, while I'm speaking with you, the Israeli spy planes and the Israeli helicopters and the boats, you know, the Israeli boats are shelling the you know, different targets in the Gaza Strip. You know, like yesterday night, the main power plant in the Gaza Strip has shut down due to the because they are running out of industrial fuel that generates the power plant, and for more than 20 hours now people are living in totally blackout and darkness. The average, you know, even before the power plant shut down, the average of daily shut blackout of electricity is about between 12 to 16 hours a day. The situation is very critical and very serious.
What about the hospitals and medical care for people? Do they not have power for the hospitals as well?
Well, even the hospitals now, they are only working on the backup generators. And to speak about the generators, the backup generators are not designed for long hours, long time hours to work. You know, the backup generators are designed for a few hours, you know, couple of hours or 3 hours for maximum. And now the hospitals, the main hospitals in Gaza, are totally dependent on these generators. And you can imagine what it would be if the one of the backup generators will stop, you know, like the IUG, you know, the intensive care unit, and the children, premature children unit, and many other departments like emergency departments. If they lost the electricity for a few seconds, hundreds of people would die directly. Since the Israeli actually attack started in Gaza, the hospitals were not ready at all to receive this huge amount of numbers of people and injuries, you know, rushed to the hospitals, because the hospitals were suffering lack of medical supplies and equipment and many other things like cooking gas, which is needed to cook for the food and feed the patients in the hospital. So once the Israeli strike started, dozens but hundreds of injuries start to rush into the hospitals, and the hospitals were not ready at all, and they were overwhelmed with those number of injuries. You know, like very simple materials were not available, like the gloves, like surgical materials, and even though the hospitals are not really ready to receive such a huge to make, you know, a very serious medical operations, because the equipment and the spare parts and whatever, due to the Israeli blockade imposed a year ago on the Gaza Strip, which complicated the lives of all Palestinians and all sectors, health, water, and so. Now, like yesterday, the Israeli have received 40 trucks of donations from the Egypt, coming from Egypt to Gaza, and these were located in the, you know, Ministry of Health warehouses and to be distributed to the hospitals. But still, you know, they are still appealing the people for more blood units and in order to put for the patients. However, the people are so scared to leave their homes and go to the central blood bank to donate their bloods and to give to the patients. Generally speaking, the health sector is really in danger and living in a very critical conditions, very critical situations. Today, one of the main hospitals started to appeal with the Ministry of Health, the outside world, that they should send to Gaza very professional surgeons, you know, in order to help and to give a chance to those patients, a chance for life, you know, because very simple things is not available and the equipment is not available. And so at the same time, you know, like the strikes are still on. Every hour there are casualties, there are dead people, there are injuries in the field of the Gaza Strip.
Please describe to us, you know, we hear reports in our country that the media has largely ignored a lot of that area, but we hear reports that Gaza is virtually a prison camp with barbed wire and walls and almost a total and complete blockade of supplies coming in. Is that the actual picture?
Well, in a way or another, yes, you know, because since June 2007, the Israeli have imposed a very strict blockade. You know, first of all, let me say that Gaza Strip is 330 kilo square, and it's 1.5 million are living inside this small area. After the Israeli blockade this Gaza Strip, they closed all the crossings, so no people can leave in or out without a very high coordination, you know, with only four patients can leave in that time, you know. The number of trucks, of humanitarian trucks, only allowed for international humanitarian aid organizations like the United Nations, UNRWA, and other international humanitarian aid workers was not sufficient quantities in all along these year and a half almost. Was not enough for the people. So the rates of poverty in the Gaza Strip have increased, you know, to more than 75%. The unemployment has reached over than 85%.
Oh my.
So you can see, like, there are 60% of the Gaza population are living under the line of poverty, which is less than $2 a day. And that's a very catastrophical situation, actually. It's very, very dear humanitarian situation that people are living in, and the blockade has affected all the life elements. We are talking about the electricity, which is no more available in Gaza, and another crisis, which is a very serious crisis, which is the water. You know, now, today I was speaking with the water utility from my home, and they told me that 60% of the Gaza population have no access to water, but only a few hours every one day a week, you know, which means, like, you know, people, they don't have access to water, people, they don't have sufficient food, people do not get medical treatment, they don't have access to leave in and out the Gaza Strip. So practically, Gaza is living, you know, in a prison. And Oxfam believed that the Israeli imposed the blockade is a collective punishment for 1.5 million people living in Gaza. And the blockade must end immediately because the people are really in more and more dire conditions and their situation. So Oxfam, since the blockade, have called the international community and the world leaders to act immediately and to pressure Israel to end their blockade against the Gaza Strip, which didn't happen. And now, like, beside the blockade and beside the humanitarian situation that dozens living in, now the Israeli military attacks came to increase the fear and to increase the suffering of the people. While I'm speaking with you, with my own family, we are living now in the saloon, in the main saloon central of my apartment. Every night there are huge, massive attacks coming from the Israeli F-16 missiles targeting different places in the Gaza Strip, in Gaza City, which is around my home. They target security buildings, they target universities, they target homes, they target mosques. 2 days ago when the Israeli in Jabalia targeted in the midnight, you know, whatnot, in the midnight, even at 2 a.m. in the morning, they targeted a mosque, which was located in between the civilians' houses, and that target with the Israeli F-16 led to a collapse of a civilian's house. Five sisters of 11 members' family got killed directly and immediately, and that gives us, as a humanitarian aid workers and as a citizens in the Gaza City and the Gaza Strip, that nobody is safe from those such targets, you know, and this gives us sense of insecurity even inside our homes, because you never know where is the next target. Another issue that should be raised, which is the sewage lagoons, you know, that are in north of Gaza. There is a huge sewage lagoons which contains 2.5 million to 3 million cubic meter of sewage water. You know, the intensive Israeli attacks shaking these lagoons, and these lagoons might collapse any moment. And the collapse of these lagoons threat, you know, thousands of lives that might sink with their own sewage. And this is another dramatical conditions that led to the water utility appeal the international community to pressure Israel not to strike, you know, in such places, because it might lead to death of thousands of people immediately.
Well, what proportion of the deaths and the injuries are civilians? It sounds to me like so many of the folks are civilians, and how on earth do you sleep at night with your family? How can you live under these conditions? Do you have any kind of normal life at all?
Well, I think for us in these days, especially like in the last 4 days, normality phrase is not in our dictionary, actually, because no sleep. You know, for me, I have two babies. One is 15 months old, and the second one is 4 months old.
Oh, my.
And all of us living in these as saloon, as I told you. In the night, like, we couldn't sleep, even in the daytime, you know, that when we are talking about F-16 missile, we are talking about an earthquake happens. So every time they attack, every time they launch, my babies wakes up panicking, crying. Last night I tried, that happened, so I tried to make them sleep, and I tried to hug to sleep. So they fall asleep, and whenever they fall asleep, another attack happens. So me, my wife, my family, my father, my mother, my brother, we are about 10 family members living in two-floor buildings, and it's really very serious, intense conditions. We don't have electricity. It's very difficult now to go out in the street. Since 4 days, we didn't leave the house. We just, you know, waiting. We don't have enough food backup even in our homes. So we eat whatever is available in the house, and only listening to the news through the radio and see what's going on around us. You know, and this gives us more burden on our shoulders. And people, all you know, from neighbors and from my calls to my colleagues and my friends, and so I'm too scared. I have too many fears for my family, for my babies, for my sisters, for my nephews, my niece, everybody, you know, like, they live in a different areas. And Israel announced that they will continue their operations, and they will go in a military invasion inside Gaza Strip today. The Israeli defense minister said, we will go in a military field invasion in the Gaza Strip soon. And they called the 2,500 more reserved soldiers to come, and before the start of the operation or after the start, they called 7,000. So we are talking about 9,500 reserved soldiers from the Israeli side are called to be ready for the military invasion, and this gives us a clear indicator that the operation will go on and will continue in the Gaza Strip. We, as Oxfam, believe what's going on in Gaza is a collective punishment which is against and violates the international humanitarian law. The international humanitarian law have said that, you know, and preserve the right of civilians to have security, to have food, to have a drink, to have education, and to have shelter. These five items as no more exist. The Israeli are using very excessive force against Hamas, against the people, not only Hamas. You know, if Hamas is isolated from the civilians, we would say yes, but Hamas is buildings, the police buildings and mosques are located among the civilians' houses, which is now a target, targeted hardly by the Israeli, different kind of airstrikes and different kind of attacks. Oxfam vision toward this or thought like the way out of this, that the Israeli should immediately stop the military operation in the Gaza Strip. This is number one. Number two, the Israeli must end their blockade against Gaza and give a chance for 1.5 million people a better chance for life in order to be a better partners for peace in the future. The third point is that, you know, calling Palestinian leaders and the Israeli leaders to sit together and negotiate, because the people are no more can hold it, you know, in their burden. You know, otherwise we will face more of casualties. Now, in this moment, we are talking about the number of people that killed reached 390 Palestinian in Gaza got killed. 1,765 people were injured. 200 of them are seriously in a conditions. 35 child out of these numbers got killed. 15 to 20 women got killed in this operation. So you can imagine yourself how much pain and how much psychological conditions all of us in the Gaza Strip, all of us, like 1.5 million people, are in a psychological, and we are in the face of the Israeli strike.
Can you tell me, as far as the response from the world community, what you understand there is the response from the world community now? Are they condemning this in the eyes of the Palestinian people, or what do you think about the world community involved in this?
Well, I can see from the radio that we are listening that there are demonstrations and the internet, the people outside the world in Arab countries and European countries are demonstrating to support the Palestinians and ask the Israelis to stop their military operations in Gaza. But, you know, at the same time, we are in Oxfam, have called the world leaders to act immediately and must not step aside from what's happening in Gaza, because just condemning what's happening or calling both sides for more self-control, this is not enough. I think the world leaders has to take a practical steps and talk to Israel and to ask them to stop their attacks immediately in order to save the civilians, in order to save the Gaza population and give them a chance of life by ending the blockade. The international communities are voices is reaching Gaza. Their support is reaching Gaza, which feels the people. It's sort of a symbolic solidarity with the people here. But I think that at the same time, the symbolic solidarity is really a good thing and make people feel better. But it doesn't protect them from the Israeli shelling, or it doesn't give them food, or it doesn't give them a drink, you know. So this is like, the fear is the fear in Gaza. The fear is every day going higher and higher and higher. I think it people here, they understand how much the outside people are giving solidarity, but at the same time, you know, I'm sorry, it doesn't help much unless the world leader, the decision makers, took a strict decision in order to improve the Palestinians' life and the Gaza population's life.
I can tell you, as an American, once again, just like the problem between the Israelis and Lebanon a couple of years ago, I am ashamed at the lack of response by the American government to this situation. They seem content to just let it go on without a serious effort to put a stop to it. And I am not convinced that a government as powerful as the United States, maybe the UK and France and some of the neighbors there could put a stop to this, but I don't know that the will is there by the government. Maybe the people, but not by the government. And I'm ashamed of the American response to this. I really am. We've done nothing for the past 8 years to ameliorate the situation there. Virtually nothing. What can we do? Is there anything we can do as citizens, the listeners of this program? And one other thing I wanted to ask you about the Egyptian border. Are the Egyptians cooperating at all with the people of Gaza, or are they placating the Israelis now?
Well, I think like the Gaza population within this tough time, they are really they expect more than this from the Egyptian side. The Egyptians really are a key player in the Palestinians' cause. They are the one who brokered the truce between the Palestinians and the Israelis, and Gaza have their borders in the Egyptian side between Egypt and Gaza. So the only access, the only exit from Gazans is the Egyptian border. And now that the border is totally closed, today they closed it. They opened it for a few trucks to come into Gaza. Yesterday they opened it as well for about 10 trucks of medical aids. They released it to be into Gaza. They allow 35 injured to go out for a treatment. Today about 15 injuries only went out, and four electricity generators they bring it into Gaza. The total number is 50 injured were allowed to go into Egypt, while we are talking about 1,765 injured people, 200 out of 200 seriously injured. So you can yourself say what is the 50 in comparison of that huge number of injuries who are in need for a treatment. Egyptians declared their borders totally closed today because the Israeli intensive air strikes, which is threatening their soldiers. And so while I'm speaking with you now, I can hear from my home the Israeli shelling from the boats. So it sometimes it goes like a bit far, and sometimes it goes closer and closer. So
how far offshore are the boats?
What?
How far offshore are the boats?
Well, it's a few kilometers, you know, inside. And for me, like I live in the coastline, and they were striking the Gaza port.
Can you see them?
Where? Well, no, I can't go to next to the windows because any moment attack might happen and the windows might shatter. But I can hear them myself. You know, it's a bit far, but from time to time they launch. And so,
well, Mohammed, do you have any advice for our listeners? Is there anything we can do other than just put pressure on our governments to try and help the situation?
Well, I just wanted to say that to your listeners that they should start praying for the Palestinians in Gaza and just to learn what is going on, you know, the truth, you know, because Gazans are really suffering. We as Oxfam, you know, we ask for the protections of civilians because civilians and citizens have the right to live, and they due to the international humanitarian law, not only the Palestinian civilians but the Israeli civilians as well, because Oxfam has condemned the both side attacks, you know, because all the time civilians should be totally away from any violence, which is not really, we don't hope that it will continue. So prayers from your listeners to the Palestinians that they will be safe, and be blessed, you know, and away from any potential casualties that might occur to any one of us, any homes, any places, because the attack is really hard, and the attack is really tough, and it put the Palestinians, especially in the Gaza Strip, you know, in a very psychological conditions and very tough situations. Yes.
Well, Mohammed, I want to thank you so much for giving us a window into what is taking place there right now. I think it's important that everyone should know. I don't think enough people know what is going on in the horror. They just don't understand the horror of what you are experiencing right now, and that's why we wanted to have you on today, to make sure our listeners know what is happening there. The truth is what is happening there, and I want to thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mohammed. Well, if that isn't sobering, I don't know what would be. I find it difficult to talk after that. I can't imagine being holed up in a small apartment with that many family members, not knowing when a F-16 is going to fly over and put a missile into your house and kill all of your family members, a 4-month-old and a 15-month-old, and your father and your mother and your wife. It's inexcusable. And I have a lot to say about it, and we will say a lot about it after the top of the hour. But once again, we find the American government supporting this carnage, this horror, and not doing hardly anything about it. And the American people let that happen. We let that happen. And this is how life is. You heard firsthand what it's like living in that hell, that living hell of where they're at right now. Yes, Hamas has done some terrible things, but the huge majority of the 1.5 million people that live in Gaza have done nothing but try and live in peace. They're trying to have decent water, even some sewage, and enough food to eat and medical care. That's their crime. And it's unconscionable is what is taking place there right now. Absolutely unconscionable. We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour, and we're going to talk about this when we come back, and hopefully you will join us. Listen to the Guy James Show on the Hit On Radio Network.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The California Labor Federation's Steve Smith says as California struggles to close a $40 billion state budget gap, Republicans there have frozen 2,000 infrastructure projects while trying to force state workers to take 2 days off each month without pay.
The last thing that we want to be doing when we're faced with a financial crisis as large as the one that we have now, is take money out of the hands of workers, because that's going to just make things worse.
Smith says organized labor in California is seeking a rational solution to the budget crisis that keeps money in workers' pockets.
Organized labor has been very active in pushing for a budget that's fair to workers, that won't take money out of the pocket of workers, and that won't cut vital services like Medi-Cal, unemployment, food stamps, things that people really need in these tough economic times.
Walmart is hoping to start off the new year by paying as much as $640 million to settle 63 wage theft lawsuits filed by its workers. The final amount Walmart will pay is determined by how many workers will be compensated. The lawsuits were filed in response to Walmart practices that forced workers to work without pay during breaks. Governors are taking drastic measures to deal with budget shortfalls, leaving many state employees pondering what the next step should be. Jesse Russell reports.
A majority of states are going into 2009 facing major budget shortfalls, and state workers are often finding themselves under the knife of governors tasked with tough decisions. In Maryland, state workers faced their first forced unpaid furlough on Friday, when the state closed down in an attempt to save $34 million. The second state closure will come on January 2nd. Most workers will be asked to take two more unpaid furloughs by June 30th. A similar move in California that would mandate twice monthly furloughs has led to a legal challenge. The lawsuit was filed by the professional engineers and California government, alleging that the governor does not have the right to cut wages or hours without approval by the California legislature. Washington's governor is also facing a lawsuit for attempts to make up for lost tax revenue. The union representing 40,000 state workers filed unfair labor practice charges after the governor used a 2002 collective bargaining law, which she says allows her to hold out on additional funding of employee contracts if the new budget cannot provide. The lawsuit also calls for the provision in the collective bargaining law to be revoked. Here is today's economic report. Retailers know holiday sales were bad this year, but what does that mean for the surplus of stores? According to a new report by the International Council of Shopping Centers, 73,000 storefronts could be shuttered during the first half of 2009. The group says sales at stores open for less than a year dropped by nearly 2% during the final 2 months of 2008. That drop is the largest in the 40 years the statistic has been tracked.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Is my creation! Life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. Six. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Thank you for staying with us through the news. I have to be honest with you, I'm still shaken over that interview. I know that right now it's 11:05 p.m. in Gaza City. darkness, no electricity. Radio's running on batteries to find out what's going on in the outside world. Not enough food. Not enough medical care. Not enough water. A sewage system that is non-existent. Three-quarters of the people living in poverty. 85% unemployment. Barbed wire and cement walls surrounding the country on three sides. And the sea on the other side patrolled by Israeli gunboats. Now, do not misunderstand what I have to say here. I beg you, do not understand and misunderstand what I have to say. I do not condone Hamas or Hezbollah and the actions that they take in most of the things that they do. I do not. Nobody can support that. Nobody can support lobbing a missile, no matter how ineffective it is, no matter how chintzy a piece of crap weapons that you have. You cannot support them throwing them over at innocent people in Israel. But international law says and has said for a long, long time now that the response to something like that has to be proportional and that it cannot be intentionally against civilians. Like it or not, and I know they don't like it, Hamas is the elected government in Gaza. Like it or not. And Israel does not want it that way. And perhaps I don't blame them for not wanting it that way. But there are different ways to handle this situation than the way it is being handled. Once again, we're getting the tough guy approach from Israel. And for all you people who want to call, any of you that want to call and say, oh, guys, anti-Semitic, that's a bunch of bullshit, and you know it, and you know that's it about the way the whole world feels. It's got nothing to do with religion. It's got nothing to do with anti-Semitism. It's got to be about humanitarianism and how you treat your fellow man. And you don't go flying American-built and American-paid-for F-16s over a city at night and drop missiles in and kill innocent people. You don't do it. How can you do it? How can you live with yourself doing things like that? How can you? Think back a couple of years ago and what happened in Lebanon, the innocent people that died in proportion to the people that they were after. It's the same thing here. How many innocent civilians have been died and mortally and critically wounded as compared to the number of Hamas people that they've been after? These latest rocket attacks, little pissant rocket attacks that were sent out by Hamas, are not the reason for this response by Israel. They are the excuse. Because they've wanted to throw out Hamas, the government, for months. That's what this blockade has been about. They wanted to starve these people to death, and that is exactly what they're doing. And now that they've got them starved, they're going in and killing them. This is about the removal of the Hamas government. Think about that. Thinking about this rationalization that's taking place here. If countries on the receiving end of the violence by the United States, if they were considered justified in coming back at us with such force against us, The U.S. occupation of Iraq and Afghanistan. Think about those. Exponentially, the number of people that have been killed. Why, if you figure that out mathematically, they'd be justified in killing every American that lives. If the response was going to be proportional. And naturally, the charges of anti-Semitism are flying. Well, I don't give a damn. It's got nothing to do whether these people are Jews, whether they're Muslims, whether they're Buddhists, Confucians, Taoists, Christians, you name it. Atheists, it doesn't matter. It's got nothing to do with how you treat your fellow man. And you don't do it this way. Did you hear the fear in that man's voice? The fear for his family. Here's a man that's worked for a long time with Oxfam, a humanitarian organization helping hundreds of thousands of people around the world from Oxford University. They started this as a fight against famine back in the 40s. And so here's a man that's done that in other countries, saving other people from starvation, famine, disease. And now it's happening in his own country. A man that's worked in that endeavor for a long, long time now finds himself and his family holed up in a small apartment in the dark, unable to protect themselves against what may come at night, against the American-made and paid-for F-16s. Do you know the history of this? Do you know why these people are walled off behind barbed wire and cement? Can't get out to work. Can't get out to get medical care. The Egyptian people would help them. But the Egyptian puppet American government will not. The Western educated government officials of many of the countries in that region will not, but the people would if they could. You see, that's how Uncle Sam works. We go in and we install a puppet government like we're trying to do in Iraq, like we have done in Afghanistan, like we have done in Egypt, like we have tried to do in Jordan. I mean, in Lebanon, pardon me. Like we've tried to do in Syria, but have not had any luck as of yet. We install Western-educated people who will bend to our will. And then we say that we've gone into those countries and we've spread democracy. We've done no such thing. We've installed puppets, but we have not changed the minds of the people. And that will lead to catastrophic consequences one day. You mark my word, it will. There will not be any wave of democracy like Bush talks about, take over that region of the world. That will not happen. Because the will of the people, the thoughts of the people, have not been changed. Oh yes, they have been changed. They've been changed the other way. They've been changed so that they hate the United States and everything that we stand for. And I want to talk a little bit about today about the hypocrisy. And maybe some of you don't agree with me on this issue. And that's fine. That's what this show is about. Is discussing our ideas. I don't have the number in front of me right now, and perhaps I should have looked it up now today in light of what we were going to talk about. But do you know how many UN United Nations resolutions have been brought against Israel? Dozens. Dozens. And you know we have supported Israel every single time. Every single time. And we complain about Hezbollah, a terrorist organization. Do remember that Hezbollah was born because of the Israeli invasion of Lebanon back in 1982 when Ronald Reagan was president. Remember that. The terrible invasion of Lebanon in 1982 and the oppressive occupation that followed. And so, a resistance movement came to life. And I'm not aggrandizing them, but I'm talking about, I'm just telling you how it happened. It's the same thing that would happen here. I'd like to think it would happen here, that someone would rise up and say that we have to defend ourselves against occupiers, and I'm sure that would happen in this country. I have that much faith. It was in the same spirit as the French resistance freedom fighters against the Nazis, and the Nazis called them terrorists, remember? Well, if you've read your history, a lot of you don't remember it, I don't remember it, but that's the way it was in history. But you form a group, you resist your illegal occupiers, and you expel them from your country. And ever since, it's continued on as an effective resistance force against the Israelis. And the Israelis finally got out of Lebanon in what was it, summer, spring of around 2000. But of course, they kept the occupation of the little area in South Lebanon, Shabaab Farms. Something it seized illegally during the 1967 war. Now, the UN resolutions 465 and 476, and I don't want to bore you with a lot of these numbers, but the Security Council unanimously adopted UN resolution 465 in 1980 that addressed Israel's illegal occupation of the Palestinian territories of the West Bank, of Gaza, of East Jerusalem, and the Syrian Golan Heights. And among other things, without going into in detail about it, it condemned Israel's policy of settling parts of its population and new immigrants in those territories. A flagrant violation. Flagrant violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention. But then, the Israelis have always given the finger to the Geneva Convention unless it was something, an issue that benefited them. And that resolution called on the government of Israel to dismantle the existing settlements and in particular to cease the establishment of any new ones. And in the last, 26 years since that time, since that UN resolution, Israel has violated that resolution. And it continues to build new settlements illegally in the Palestinian-occupied territories. And the United States supports and it funds the Israeli government, allowing them to do it. And what has the UN and the world community done after passing this resolution against Israel for that? Nothing. Nothing. It's gross hypocrisy by the United States government. The House of Representatives voted overwhelmingly. Imagine this. You talk about money flowing into our government. The House Representatives voted 410-8 to unconditionally endorse Israel's illegal aggression against the Palestinians and the people of Lebanon a couple years ago. Can you imagine that? 410-8. Now, you know it was wrong. I know it was wrong. It was handled badly. It was handled in a terribly inhumane manner. We all know that. But then you and I aren't getting money funneled to us from Israeli political groups. Let's tell it like it is. The House actually praised Israel for minimizing, and in the House's words in their motion, praised Israel for, quote, minimizing civilian loss. Yeah. And along with their arrogance, this United States congressional resolution violated the UN Charter by unjustifiably claiming that Israel has the right to self-defense guaranteed it under Article 51 and has just cause to destroy, a couple years ago when they were in that situation, just cause to destroy Lebanon's infrastructure and kill innocent civilians to do it. That House and the Senate resolutions are the most compelling evidence I could give you that both parties have unconditional support for Israel no matter what it does. No matter what it does. And they also have shown the Bush administration, in particular, their utter contempt, as has been shown over and over and over again, for all international laws and norms, and its unconditional endorsement of Israel when it violates them, which they have done and continue to do so egregiously. I know a lot of you remember that the horrible attack on the civilian target in Qana, in Lebanon, killed 60 innocent men, women, and at least 37 children. It's okay. They're just others. They're just others. I do believe it was Big New Brzezinski that when he said earlier today that this is not a situation that will ever be resolved by the Israelis, by the parties involved. It will never, ever be resolved by those parties. It has to be resolved by outside parties. I think a good start would be, while we're still the big kid on the block militarily, at least for now, for the United States to stop funding Israel and their military hardware and giving them whatever they need military and the sanctions to do whatever they want to do with it, to put a stop to it right now. Not give them another damn dollar for military hardware. And then tell the rest of the people in that area, don't you dare touch Israel or you will have us to contend with. That will put a stop to it. If we're going to back everybody, back somebody in that region, let's back them all. Let's take their toys away from them, in particular Israel's, and warn the rest of them, don't mess with Israel or you will have us to contend with. As long as we are involved in that situation, and we are, and we have been, and we always will be, hundreds of million, billions of our dollars going to the Israelis. Actually, it's where the people in Gaza got their arms. We were backing the other group down there that was running for trying to take control. And we sent in a bunch of arms, and guess what? Hamas won the whole deal, and they got the arms away, and that's what they're using now. So we armed Hamas. Hell, we arm everybody. It's not going to be solved by sitting those people down together. It just will not. The differences are too great. They have been, they remain so, and they always will be. I am not optimistic about that ever being changed. Do I sound out of touch? Let me know. 866-546-5254. I would like to hear from you today. It's just sad because of some of the things that have taken place in this whole mess. It's sad the way that the Israelis have handled themselves. It's sad the way the Palestinians have handled themselves. It just need not be this way. Just doesn't have to be this way. Latter J says on the chat room, "Guy, we can't even control our own government. How can we expect to control theirs?" Isn't that the truth? For 8 years, we've had a party running this government that doesn't believe in government. And if you don't believe in government, how can you run a government? So true. We're going to pause for a break. I need one. And we'll be back in just a minute. In the meanwhile, let's listen to something a little upbeat. It's All Right.
Well, it's glad to be here, happy to feel that. It don't matter if you're by my side, I'm satisfied. Well, it's all.
Loved Roy Orbison's voice. Thought Roy was something unique. Absolutely unique. Died at a young age, but my God, what a legacy of music the man left behind. Oh, a little bit strange, a little bit weird, a little odd looking. had many idiosyncrasies, but man, the guy could belt out a tune.
Mm.
Loved it. Hey, you're listening to the Guy James Show here today. Been kind of an emotional day. Listening to our friend from Gaza City talking about being shelled and having to try and protect his family. Not much he can do about it. Man's inhumanity toward man. Will it ever end? Is it any better now than it was in the days of the barbarians, of Attila the Hun and those people? Is it any better now? Does man not have just as much malice in his heart toward his fellow man today as the people did back in the barbaric days? I think we do. And I think we prove it. I think when you put a man, and I'm not a peacenik, I think when you put a man in a jet airplane that'll fly beyond the speed of sound, equip it with lethal weapons, all kinds of missiles and bombs, and you fly that thing over an inhabited area, a densely populated area, and drop a bomb, I say that is as inhumane as you can get. I could not. I could not. Does that make me a wuss? Does that make me whatever the names of the killers like to call people? I don't know. And I'm not disparaging in any way, nor would I ever disparage the service people have given to this country and killed when they had to kill. Because the truth is, there have been times when it was necessary. But my God, the way we do it now, at least in the old days, you had to look a man in the eyes before you killed him. You had to live with that. You had to understand the pain and the horror of it all. But now when you're shelling somebody from miles and miles away out at sea, or you're flying the American-built and paid-for jet airplanes over and dropping missiles and bombs on people, you do not have to see the pain. You do not have to see the agony. You don't even have to understand it. You don't have to get your hands dirty. It's what modern warfare has turned into. Push-button warfare. Drones. Camera-guided missiles. All that. And right, Flotter, it is a video game. I guess I'll not change that. I would if I could. Do you remember just a couple of years ago when the invasion of Lebanon took place? And if I sound like I'm bashing Israel, it's because I am. I don't like the way they do things militarily. I don't know, I don't like the punishment they exact from somebody when they've got hit a little bit. They've always got to hit back thousands of times worse. But do you remember just a couple of years ago that the TV networks gave unlimited airtime to all the apologists for Israel here in this country? And the message rolls out that no nation, least of all Israel, can permit any bombardment or any armed incursion across its borders without retaliation. And people forget what I believe is the guiding rule in that that wave, that tsunami of drivel that comes from the media, is that the viewers should be denied the slightest access to any of the real historical context, or indeed to anything that happened prior to when that whole thing started. You remember what the excuse was? They captured an Israeli soldier. And the killing of two others by Hamas. And that hit the headlines. So we're supposed to stop and drop it all right then and there. And not remember what happened in the past. Just forget the history that happened before that. But let's just take a brief look at what happened before that, right before that. Once again, you have the Israelis not happy that Hezbollah was in Lebanon. And so what do? They send an Israeli aircraft. They fired a missile at a car in an assassination attempt. The missile missed the car. Instead, it killed three Palestinian children and wounded 15. And we go back to a week before that when another Israeli aircraft fired missiles at a van in another attempt at an assassination, a political assassination. And they killed 9 innocent Palestinians. And you go back the week before that when Israel shelled the beach at Beit Lahia, it killed 8 civilians and injured 32 more. That's what happened right before their incursion into Lebanon. Twenty dead and 47 wounded, all of them Palestinians, most of them women and children. And Israel, well, we regret that. But they didn't regret it in the least. Most of the time, they don't even bother to say they regret it. They reserve the right to slaughter Palestinians whenever they want to. They reserve the right to assassinate the leaders and smash their homes and steal their waters and tear out their olive groves. And when they try to resist, why, then they become terrorists, right? Then they're told they're terrorists that are intent on wrecking the peace process. So Israel goes into Lebanon. They just want to wipe out Hezbollah. That's all. They don't want to harm the people of Lebanon. That's what they said. As long as the people aren't supporters of Hezbollah, that we were told, that's what we saw on TV nonstop during that time. As long as they weren't supporting Hezbollah or standing anywhere near them in the neighborhood, in a car, a truck, out in the road, on a bus, wherever, well, then it's okay. We won't kill you, possibly. Let's head on over to the phone. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, is this the Great Guy James Show?
Well, yes, it is. I am great. Omnipotent, actually.
No.
There, I finally admitted it, okay?
Yes, but at least you have admitted it.
Yeah.
You have taken 6 or 7 years out of my life by not admitting it. And it's just like... This is Eric from Vermont.
Hi, Eric. Good to hear from you, my friend, and Happy New Year to you, buddy.
Happy New Year to you. And hopefully, the next year will be better, but I have a feeling it's going to go down before it goes up. That was a really great interview we had with Mr. Ali.
Thank you. I enjoyed having
you. I don't even know. How did you get in contact with that gentleman?
Well, let me take you quickly through it. I knew that Oxfam had some people over there, and so I called the Oxfam people, and they always do. They have had them working there. I've done a little study with Oxfam, and they're out of Oxford University in England. Anyway, I called their branch here in the United States, and they didn't know anything about it, And so they gave me the number of the Great Britain in London, and I called the London branch, and the London branch said, well, they'd see if they could find me anybody that had a phone, one of their people, an active phone in the Gaza City. And they did. And so I called him about, 1 o'clock this afternoon, our time, and he said, well, he wasn't sure if he could talk because they were under attack at the moment. And to call back at 3:15 our time and confirm it, which I did, and then we got him on it. That's the process we went through today.
Well, you had mentioned maybe 15 minutes ago taking some heat for the possibility and not the reality of you being anti-Israel. I don't think anybody in this country or any other country, generally, for the most part, it's really anti-Israel. But I think people looking for a fair resolution of a situation that has occurred ever since 1948. Would you agree with that, sir?
Boil that down for me again.
1948, the reinstatement of Israel by UN.
Yeah, Ben-Gurion made the famous speech and all, yes, and they became a country, and there's been trouble ever since.
Yes, and it's much more complicated than a lot of the American mainstream media shoots out to us. I mean, very, very, very evident with Mr. Brzezinski and his daughter and Joe Scarborough today.
Oh.
I mean, obviously, it was a beautiful, beautiful put down of Mr. Brzezinski concerning Joe Scarborough's ignorance upon the matters, other than, well, we're going to go for a little swim, but we have 2 inches of water, so try to keep your overhand Australian crawl in order here.
Oh, yeah, that's about the size of it, wasn't it,
yeah,
though? Man, you know, Eric, if the American people, and I'm guilty, we're probably all guilty. If we were as good at history as we ought to be, if we were knowledgeable about history, maybe we'd understand that situation a whole lot more. If the American public knew, for example, and studied what went on in that entire area with the British, with the French, for so many years before the latest episode took place, they'd understand a little more the hostilities and the angst of those people toward the West, but nobody understands anything about it, I don't think.
Would you allow me to ask a question? Would you say, on a global perspective, that there really is an extreme lacking of a diplomatic effort in terms of the power and control countries, let us say, to really resolve a reasonable effort to reduce the tensions that are in that area? I mean, I'm not talking Darfur, or where hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people have had, you know, in little villages, their heads chopped off and so on and so forth, and having a knee-jerk reaction to that, because obviously we can't go around settling all of the regions in the world. But pinpointing areas that could be more volatile in terms of their effect upon the rest of the globe. Don't get me wrong, Darfur is very, very big on my mind, as in many other regions of the world. And these regions have existed for millenniums. I mean, the inhumanity that has gone on in so much of our globe on a local level, and now we have more privy to having more information. And within the United States, we don't get all the information. On your chat room, I put a site to indicate that there are some other news sources other than what we have in the United States for newspapers. There was one site in Israel within the last 3 or 4 days that I got onto, and there are people within Israel that are actually extremely profoundly questioning the government of Israel to take such abusive actions in retribution for whatever Hamas or Hezbollah has done to the side of Israel.
Oh, yes. It would be wrong to condemn everybody. That you're exactly right. I know an Israeli that feels exactly that way. But you know, Eric, there's one thing missing out of the recipe, out of the mix, the equation there, like in Darfur, that they do have in the Middle East conflict is, and there's no money involved in Darfur. No money. No big arms deals, no big arms manufacturers selling F-16s, huge arms contracts. There's none of that involved there, so nobody gives a damn, except people who have a good heart and really do care about their fellow man. But
I can remember, I missed. A good protest march we had down in New York City for peace and justice. And I can remember, because I have a little back problem, the bus trip was going to drive me nuts. But I can remember a gentleman from Darfur was talking about this in Little Rutland, Vermont, at a local little plaza we have. And he was talking about all the stuff that was going on. But the mainstream media doesn't put that out, and it's really important that we really hold the mainstream media up. Boy, is this an ever-ending conversation about holding the mainstream media up to a fire glow someplace, because they're not giving the American people the information that they need. And it's really important that the Americans start looking overseas for some of the information that they could receive regarding the world situation, world perspectives within any country, whether it be Israel or Great Britain or France or Spain or Singapore, whatever.
You're so right. That takes me back to the...
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it takes me back to the Democratic Convention. Right next to us at the Democratic Convention, and I had an opportunity to talk to him, was Reuters. That's some great reporters there that were digging for the real stories, not the superficial crap. And you're so right about other newspapers around the world. There are places besides the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Tribune, and all those. And we don't get unfiltered news in this country like we should. We just and we've got so much of this, Britney Spears and that kind of stuff. I'd say the average American, and I'm sure you'd agree, the average American adolescent knows a whole lot more about showbiz than they know about geography and world conflicts.
Anyway, Guy, you look like you're getting toward the end of your hour.
Yes.
Of the second hour of the Great Guy James Show. And I think it's really important for people to know that the situation between the reinstatement of Israel in 1948 as the UN Charter to be, and the way we have wound up into it, has been completely bastardized by a complete lack of diplomatic, lack of power, lack of this, but pro-region here, trading the balance off there, trading the balance. I mean, it's like a little friggin' chess game that these guys are playing, that are in control with the power and control that they have, and nobody diplomatically or in a power or control situation really wants to go against the United States and or Israel to set up on what's going on here.
Right, you are.
Because they don't want to throw away all those wonderful oil preserves that our American and international corporations want to sell off to the world community.
I agree. I fully agree.
Thank you. And I'm, I, I, I guess I'm speechless right now.
Well, I am too. I that interview did something to me today, and I know I'll think about it probably.
That was
long
a great interview.
We were lucky to have him on. I wish everybody in the United States could have heard that interview. It had to affect you. It had to. Eric, thanks for calling. It's so great to hear from you, as always. And once again, Happy New Year, and thank for your support for the program.
Well, thank you for being online, and I hope you continue as long as you can possibly muster. And here's a program for you, since I'm online, not in the chat room. All you listeners to Guy James out there that are not on the chat room, please believe Guy James gets a very, very little support from anything else that he can fund himself and for the people that support him individually as independent Americans. So if you can shoot some dollars Guy's way, we really, really would appreciate it.
Thanks, Eric.
Yes, sir.
Bye now.
Bye.
And you can do that by going to theguyjamesshow.com. And I posted a new message on the blog. I'm afraid I haven't been over at the blog in a while. I'm a busy guy. And I posted a new message on the blog, guyjamesshow.com/blog. guyjamesshow.com/blog. It pretty much tells the whole story. And I hope you'll stop on over there and take a look. We are a listener-supported program, and we are appealing for your assistance at this time. I know a lot of people are, and I know a lot of people are in dire straits right now, and it's a difficult time, but we will continue to try and bring you interviews like we had today, okay, Johnny O, we'll have Dixie Chicks tomorrow. See, he's hounding me now. He's hounding me for Dixie Chicks. And I like them, too. I like them, too. You know what? Lots of times when I'm flying, I listen to the Chicks. I don't know. There's just something about their music. It's good flying music. I like so many kinds of music. Have you heard These Priests? Oh, now, I suppose it's not appropriate. Now, you wouldn't, you know, but there's three priests, these Irish priests, that have a new album. Oh, my God. Oh, man, can these guys sing. Pity Jesu, Panis Angelica. Oh, wonderful music, wonderful music. Check it out, the three priests. Fantastic. Just heard them for the first time this week, and am I glad. I've got a bunch of it downloaded here. Hey, thanks so much for listening today. This was an important show. Tell everybody you know about this situation if they don't know about it, what's going on over there. It's a horrible tragedy. And, you know, that's the best thing we can do as a nation, and besides helping ourselves in these times of trouble, to try and help these people out somehow. We've got to. That's what it's all about. We're on this little tiny planet all by ourselves, and we got to take care of one another. Thanks so much for joining us here today. I appreciate your listenership more than you know, and we'll be back.